Hi, and welcome to MR Explorer, where friends Z Johnson and Christina Perkins get together on a regular basis to learn and explore different topics regarding the market research industry. Welcome to today's episode. We hope you enjoy.
Hi, Mario. It's so good to have you here. Thank you for lending us your voice and giving us some of your time as Z and I kind of further explore this topic of diversity, inclusion, and equity in the market research industry. I would love first for you to introduce yourself. Just tell us a little bit about your background, what you're up to right now, and just your involvement in the market research industry.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. So a little bit of background on myself. My name is Mario Carrasco. I'm co-founder and principal of Think Now. We are a market research firm focused on the multicultural consumer. Co-founded Think Now in 2011. So it's going to be 10 years almost, which is crazy. Came from a company called Garcia Research previous to that. That was acquired by, it's been acquired by like three companies now, GfK or Knowledge Networks, GfK, and then Ipsos. And I was in a very similar role at Garcia Research. I was VP of online research there. And that was actually 2008. I got hired, and that was my first market research job. So my background is really in marketing. Online marketing. I worked at MSN Latino for a little while, building online communities, kind of in the early days of reaching Hispanics online, when, you know, it was all about just language, not too much about cultural relevance. And so the way I got into market research is I literally saw a job posting about building a panel. I had no idea what a panel was, so quick Google search was like, okay, you get paid to take surveys. And I thought, wow, this is way easier than, you know, getting people to a website that they don't want to interact with, that you could actually pay them. Unbeknownst to me, when I got hired at Garcia Research, prior to that, several companies, Ipsos in partnership with Univision, you know, I think there was like two or three attempts prior to 2008 for market research firms trying to build Hispanic panels, because, multicultural marketing, reaching Hispanics after the 2000 census came out that, you know, severely underestimated how many Hispanics were in the U.S. You know, you had companies investing real dollars now trying to reach the Hispanic market. And so, of course, you know, research came with that. At that time, telephone was, you know, primary source of reaching Hispanics. There was this whole thing about the digital divide. But towards the end of the, you know, of the 2000s, you know, right before 2010, when you saw kind of the industry shifting from phone to online, companies were trying to do that with Hispanic audiences as well, with very little success. So when I joined Garcia Research, I built what became one of the first nationally representative Hispanic online panels. And that's really what I've built my career on. And it's kind of weird to reflect on that because, you know, I didn't come from market research. You know, you had these large companies fail that like are, you know, giants in our industry. And the only thing I did differently was, you know, build it, you know, culturally relevantly, you know, the reason that other companies failed is that they were just trying to translate existing general market panels, you know, translate that into Spanish, not looking at the incentives, not looking at the UI, not implementing, for example, we did welcome calls, right? You know, the one thing we found that Hispanics are much more skeptical about taking online surveys, giving personal information. So we had a call center, so we utilized that. When someone would register, we give them a call and say, hey, we're real people. I just went on a big ramble. I don't even know what the question was. So that
That was a great answer.
Yeah.
I think that gives us a really good point of view of just where your experience lies, especially where your passions lie in the market research industry. I love hearing that. I think it's such a common way of entering the market research industry of, well, I saw this job posting and I didn't know what it was, so I figured I'd go and check it out. And then I did this really amazing, gigantic thing for the industry. And I said, well, I guess I'm here. Yeah. You know, I think so many of us fall into a category, something like that. At least, you know, where people are starting their careers, you know, somewhat 8 to 10 years ago or further, where market research wasn't really, it wasn't a discipline in school. Like, folks didn't really know what it was. It was really just, well, I knew this person that's exactly how I started in the industry. Was I had a friend. It was the 08 recession. I needed a job. I wanted to get out of a Sunday to Sunday, 24-hour customer service job. And she was like, well, I work with panels and I help people take surveys. I find the people to take surveys for companies. And I was like, I don't even know what that means. I ignore those emails. I don't have them and I unsubscribe. So I guess I'll come work for you. And it worked out.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. And you started in 08. So I think right around the time I started.
Yeah. I mean, it was a fun time. It's a fun time for everyone, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Oh yeah. 2008. What a year.
Mario, I also just wanted to do a quick, I know we're going to get into some pretty heavy topics, I think. But also we like to try to keep it as light as possible while just respecting the topic. As you can tell, we like to laugh a lot. And keep things, just approachable. I wanted to just check in with you and do just a quick temperature check and see just how you're doing, how you're feeling, let you kind of get out anything that you need to get out. How are you doing?
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm doing well. I mean, I think day to day it changes, and I think that's with everyone. I have two little kids, a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old, doing the Zoom school. So that's, I think, more difficult for the parents than it is the kids. It's kind of amazing how resilient they are,
totally
adjusting. And so that, you know, I get some strength looking at them like, oh, wow, they're totally fine. And, you know, my wife and I are just crumbling at times, but it's all good. I think it's, you know, given where we're at, kind of Q4, interestingly, you know, I think the industry took a hit in general, kind of Q2, mm-hmm. when the pandemic first hit and we didn't really know what was happening. But once we realized this isn't going away anytime soon, the research industry has bounced back. Mm-hmm. And so I'm grateful that I'm in an industry that's thriving. It's also kind of weird, right? You have that guilt seeing a lot of people are not as fortunate. So, there's that, and especially kind of given in the space we're in, given that, you know, we're researching multicultural consumers on a constant basis. I see a lot of that. I see the impact that the pandemic is having on a lot of consumers. So, overall, I mean, I think we're in a good place and this year has been, you know, this year has been an interesting year given what, of course, you know, having not only the pandemic from a social justice perspective, I think, that's been helpful for our company in that a lot of people are now realizing how important understanding multicultural consumers are. And so it's been great to have companies, you know, kind of realize the importance of what we're doing.
Yeah. Are you seeing an uptick in the companies that are reaching out to you to actually get multicultural research done?
For sure. Yeah. We're seeing not only companies reaching out to us, more companies reaching out to us, different types of companies, but also companies that are much more receptive to have calls with us, right? So yeah. We put out a lot of thought leadership on multicultural consumers. We have been for the past 7 or 8 years. So following up with companies that download our report, so you know, it's much easier, much more receptive to taking calls with us.
Yeah, I'd imagine. You know, one of the things that is interesting about this past year, really, and you mentioned this, is not only do we have the pandemic, but we've also had a reckoning of sorts with where we sit in the United States in regards to social justice. Being a member of the market research community and being Latinx in the market research community, I am curious to hear your perspective on either experiences you've had, or especially with Think Now and in the work that you've done in the industry, issues that you've seen with diversity and inclusion in market research, both within our own walls as market research professionals, as well as the research that we are conducting as market researchers.
Yeah, so I think I have a unique perspective in that, and that, you know, if I think back to the Garcia research days, that company was extremely diverse. I mean, it was, you know, Hispanic owned and operated company. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, most of the executives there were of Latinx background, myself included. You know, our call center, because people needed to be bilingual, you know, primarily Latinx. So it was this weird bubble where it was very diverse. And then, you know, as I moved up in that company to more of executive kind of VP position, and you start to have calls and meetings and in-person meetings, you know, with CPG companies, primarily on the East Coast, you start to see that, okay, you're the only Latinx person in the room. And I think that was, you know, when I founded Think Now, becoming a founder, now you realize like you're almost always the only Latinx person in the room. And I don't think that's a reflection necessary of the market research industry. I think, unfortunately, as you start to get up in more executive positions, there just aren't many people of color. And I think, you know, when looking at our industry specifically, I'm an optimist. I don't think that it's anything more than, you know, like we were talking earlier, right? Like we stumbled into this industry, and it's an amazing industry. You can, you know, very rare is there an industry where there's almost always an entry level position that you can work yourself up, right?
Yeah.
I think it's because we suffer from a diversity problem because people don't know about the industry. And so, you know, for me, I think it's more of just people in general don't know about market research as a potential career path. And there's so many career paths. Mine was in sample, which is like a niche of a niche. You know, there's a whole full service aspect. You can go qual, you can go quant, you can go insights, you can go client, you know? And so yeah. I think there's an issue of diversity because people in general don't know about the industry, and people of color don't know about the industry in general. And so, you know, that's one thing that I'm proud of and Think Now. You know, we are minority owned and operated. You know, we've now made connections with universities here like USC, and typically that, you know, people that want to intern with us are people of color.
That's cool.
I joined an organization, Insights in Color, which is all about promoting diversity and inclusion in our industry. And they're tackling it in really cool ways as well. Like, you know, they have an initiative called Data is Beautiful. So really kind of positioning market research as a cool job, as a slick job. Like, you know, many people think about marketing and advertising and like want to work there because of the prestige. And Insights as Color is trying to create that aura for market research as well to attract more people of color. And then, you know, the second part of that question, you know, so there, you know, there's a lack of diversity from kind of a talent perspective. And these sides of the equation are related when we're talking about research, right?
You know, yeah.
Representative samples, the creation of culturally nuanced questionnaires. Mm-hmm. Those conversations aren't as prevalent because we don't have a lot of people of color kind of chiming in about, you know, hey, is this, are we reaching a representative sample of African Americans or Latinos or Asians, right? And so I think those things go hand in hand where, you know, as we start to have more people of color in our industry, you know, we'll start to grapple with the other side of that is like, how do we make research in general more diverse, the research that we do? And, you know, and hopefully Think Now is contributing to that.
Yeah. You know, I found it super interesting earlier when you were talking about your experience. One of the things you raised was your first job in the market research industry was actually creating a Hispanic panel.
Yeah.
And the piece that I found super interesting was you talked about the nuances, the differences in approach that you had to take because what had been tried before just wasn't working. Right? Like when you were at MSN Latino, that you're like, people just didn't want to come to the platform. And when you're creating this panel of Hispanics, having to do things like, wait a minute, they value that in-person contact. So when they join, we need to reach out to them so that they know they're dealing with people, not just machines. What are some of those things that you see that are continuing to impact the industry in the ways that we do research, whether it's not understanding the cultural nuance or just not having the people internally to push on that a little bit? Like what do you see is a place where we still need to work to get better at being more inclusive in the research that we do?
Yeah, that's a good question. Here's a really simple example. And this is actually a conversation I had with Whitney Dunlop Fowler, who's the founder of Insights in Color. In the qualitative research world, and I think in the quantitative research world as well, recruiters grapple with getting African Americans to come to focus group, getting Latinos to come to focus groups. And it's always, I don't know, I've heard a lot of different excuses, like, you know, the traditional ways that we recruit people aren't working. We don't have a list, phone number, email, whatever it may be.
Yep.
We were having, but the conversation was super enlightening to me. And it's something that kind of I knew intuitively, but had never really talked it out, was around incentives. Mm-hmm. When we look at focus groups, right? I mean, let's say the typical hour focus group, it's usually what, like $50, right? Something like that, maybe $100. And you can get people show up, people that are I mean, let's say like suburban white, right?
Yep.
But when you look at Latinos, African Americans in general, right? And I'm generalizing, but when we look at average household income, it's lower, right? Yep. We're making some steps towards wealth equity, but it's lower and much more likely. I mean, looking at it in the context of the pandemic is totally different, but much more likely to have multiple jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so when you look at a focus group that's giving you $50, they're not taking into account the time to get there. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're also assuming, you know, there's a lot of assumptions in focus groups that are in the afternoon, right? 7 o'clock. It's like, oh, people have a 9 to 5. Well, you know, that's not the reality for lots of people of color in this country.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they you know, they might have two jobs. They might work night shift, right? So things as simple as like incentives, right? If we want to be representative, we have to make it worthwhile. We have to take all these kind of cultural factors that exist in this country that are kind of structural differences that exist, boil down to how much we pay someone to show up for a focus group.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think things like that, I think when I had this conversation, I was like, yeah, duh, like that makes total sense. But I think it isn't things that we talk about in this industry. And I think people are afraid to talk about it, right? Because there's you're making generalizations about income, but the reality is that's the reality for lots of people of color in this country.
Totally. Totally. I think you touched on one thing before we move to the next question that I want to bring up. And that is, it's not just the incentive. It's also, it can be as basic as timing, mm-hmm. right? Like let's look at what their schedules actually are like. When right. would they be available? Like when do they have a spare minute, let alone hour, let alone 2 hours? Because let's face it, when you're doing an hour long focus group, you're talking about the travel, the intro, the follow up, you know, the travel right. path. It's not just an hour commitment that you're asking them to do. And I think there's so much wrapped up in the way that we recruit, and not just the incentive, but even as simple as what kind of time can they spare?
Yeah.
Realistically.
Exactly. Exactly. And then like other assumptions that are in that, right? Like maybe they only have one car for the household. That's split amongst a couple. Maybe they don't have a car. Like where is the focus facility located? Is it easily accessible through public transportation? You know, right. things like that, there's so many assumptions and we're focusing in on a very specific part of research focus groups, but you start to have those conversations and start to think about that. You can apply that type of thinking to other aspects, like signing up for a panel, like taking surveys on email, right? Like there's a lot of assumptions on that too. How we incentivize on a panel, right? So much of the default is like PayPal, Amazon, like, Are the people that you're looking to reach on those platforms, or do they use that, you know?
Right.
So, you know, that's the types of things that we think about.
So I'm curious, just building off of that, when you were at Garcia, or as you currently work with Think Now, do you incentivize differently? Because I know that there is a kind of a difference between acculturated and unacculturated Hispanic panel participants. I also know there's a difference between generations of Latinx people in the United States of just being able to purchase things online because of credit card availability, and that kind of difference that, like you mentioned, a lot of panel providers when designing their incentive programs might not take into consideration. What do you guys do?
Yeah, for sure. So we do incentivize, and we did. I mean, when I look at Garcia Research, you're not going to believe this, but we sent out physical checks, right?
Wow.
It was kind of insane. But I mean, I remember on a monthly basis, we would have the bookkeeper like print out hundreds of checks. We'd have the call center help us, you know, manually put them into envelopes and send them out. Thankfully now, you know, this was 08, 09. It's a much different world. People are much more comfortable using online payments. That being said, we still give the option, right? So our incentive system is actually customized on how the individual, wants to receive their payment. And we help them also through the process of, you know, if they don't, you know, have, they don't have a PayPal account, we have a phone number that people can call, where we do, you know, we have part of our panel staff actually based out of Mexico that's there receiving calls, walking them through how to do that. I mean, that's one thing that's different about our panel too, is like the customer service. Yeah. On Facebook, for example, we have a weekly Facebook Live where anyone in the panel can come join, and they can ask questions of our panel manager in real time there too.
That is incredible.
Wow.
I love that. And I think that goes to something else I was going to just make a comment on. I think it's just so important, and we've already touched on this. If you want to be speaking with different ethnic groups or different people of different either abilities or income levels or viewpoints, I mean, anybody, if you really want to be hearing all voices, if it's that important to you, you will go to where they are. You will not expect them to come to you. And even just having a Facebook Live, being able to create this very accessible customer service design with your panels, I think that is just so important to meet people where they are and not expect them to come to you.
100%.
It's almost like a matter of, it's almost like, you know, when you look at, and I talk about this from a personal experience with watching my mother from El Salvador as she was acculturating to the United States. It's almost like, as market researchers, we inherently expect people to acculturate to the market research community, in a sense, right? To the way that we recruit, to the way that we do research. And what Think Now is doing is shifting that. So like Christina said, you're meeting them where they are on their level with their needs in mind, their desires for that touch point, that help, that communication, instead of just expecting it to be, you know, I just can't help but think of like the templatized version of how you recruit people for a panel isn't going to work across all cultures because you have based it on a group of suburban white people. Right. And it's like, you cannot take that template and just expect to apply it everywhere else, whether it's an online panel or a qualitative piece. You just can't expect that cookie cutter is going to work everywhere else. And I think you've talked about that quite a bit.
You mentioned, and it's also not people of color, because what stood out to me when you said suburban white, we have a problem reaching rural white too. Yeah. Right. Like, because like you said, it's templatized. I mean, so many of the big panel companies right now, where do they recruit? Like these loyalty clubs, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. That's like the main source of recruitment in the sample industry. And that's excluding a lot of people, right? Like, yes, everyone on this call probably has some kind of loyalty, but, you know, we're in a very specific industry. I mean, you're more likely to be like a white collar, 9 to 5, like, you know, you look at coming out of this election season, right? We thought we fixed all the errors in polling, but we didn't, right? Like, again, we left out rural white, like, and so these assumptions are not only affecting multicultural, it's also just affecting the general population, you know, they're missing out on, you know, large swaths of the country because we just templatized it, like you mentioned.
And I think another point we've spoken with Pepper Miller during this series as well, is something that she brought up that also I'm reminded of now, is if you don't go to where they are, or if you don't just meet them at their level, and if you don't make them as comfortable as possible, how can you trust the insights that you're getting out of whatever interviews that you're doing, whether it's in-depth interviews or if they are focus groups where now they're worried about getting home in time, maybe they do share a car, maybe they're paying an extra amount for childcare and they're only netting like $20 out of this and the focus group is running long or there's traffic. If you're not making them as comfortable as possible, what's the value of the insights that you're forcing? Like, you're not even getting any insights out of that. You're forcing that. And how much are they just trying to say what maybe they think they should say, or just trying to get out of this as quickly as possible because they're already out of their comfort zone? You know, I don't know. That's something that I think about.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point because, one thing I say all the time is like in the multicultural marketing world, when there's a marketing faux pas that's like culturally insensitive, a lot of people like to comment on it and say, oh, look, see, they didn't work with a multicultural marketing company, or they didn't do their multicultural research. I used to be part of that chorus whenever that happened. But then as I started to be in the industry, I realized, you know what? They are doing their market research. They are reaching multicultural consumers at time, but they suffer, like what you mentioned, Christina, by not, it's not culturally nuanced. They didn't take the time. Maybe they didn't feel comfortable saying how they really felt about the ad, right?
Yeah. Like,
so I don't think that, well, yes, we can all, you know, agree as an industry to do multicultural market research. There's a long way to go. I think a lot of the big companies that have these huge faux pas and were like, how did a multi-billion dollar company do that? It's like they did invest in the research. They just didn't do it right. They just didn't take into account all these nuances.
Yeah. Let's switch gears just a little bit, because that, now I want to take us from the outside market research and bring us inside, because I can't help but think of, you know, the people that are conducting the market research, even if it is a diverse group of people, you know, if you're the only person of color who is on the inside creating the market research, having to check it before it goes out the door, you know, there's also that element of how comfortable is that person in being able to stop the presses and be like, guys, you have no idea how insensitive this is. Like, this is not going to fly, or anything around that line. What is it that you see that we are missing inside the market research walls, in the market research companies? Like, where do we start to help make sure that not only are we attracting more people of color and more diversity within our ranks, but also nurturing their voices within our ranks?
Yeah, that's a hard one. Because, you know, and I think I told you a story where even me, someone, you know, who works in multicultural marketing, I think about it a lot. I write about it a lot. I suffered from not voicing my opinion, you know, and so I had I'll leave the client name out, but I did a client trip. This is a large, you know, Fortune 500 company that I went to. And, I think we were presenting some research, but prior to the meeting, this gentleman kind of was like, hey, I want to show you some of these ads. These were billboard ads that we were thinking about, or that we're going to do in the Hispanic market. So I was like, okay, cool. So, you know, he had like these cardboard printouts of the ads. So we went to his office before going into the large conference room, and he pulled them out, you know, very proudly and wanted my feedback. So he pulled them out. And I won't describe the ads because, you know, you might know who the brand is, but they were just like so offensive. It was crazy, right? Like, I was like, wow, this, I can't believe it. Like, I can't, like, who did this, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't voice my opinion. I didn't say, wow, like, do not run that, you know? And I actually saw them. I'm here in Los Angeles. I actually saw it on a billboard several months later, and
yeah,
I felt guilty about it. Right. And so I was like, you know, here I am, someone who's more empowered than most, you know, founder of a company. People wouldn't get offended if I said something, cause that's what they're paying me for. And yet I didn't say it. So that's when I changed my mind about, you know, what people are doing, the research, they are, have good intentions. They just, you know, I'm sure someone of color along the way saw the ads, but they probably just don't feel empowered to speak up. And so, you know, that's a big question. You know, how do we fix that? That's so hard, you know, but I think it all comes down to company culture. It's not something you can force. It's going to be a process. You know, how do you make people feel safe? Because that's what it comes down to, right? If I reflect on that experience that I had, I don't think I had the relationship with the client to be that brutally honest with him. When I have research, I feel empowered because I can point to the research, and you know, my opinions and my biases are out of it. But you know, I don't know what steps a company can make to make people feel safe to speak out. I think one part of it is having more people of color so that you're not the only person, because that's a problem too. And while I know right now lots of companies have good intentions in highlighting the 1, 2, 3 people of color in their company, mm-hmm. you don't want to put the onus on them either, because yeah. that's an uncomfortable position to be in. So, you know, again, I think having a more diversity is going to help solve that. But also just taking a hard look at your company culture. You know, are you providing a safe space? Are you cultivating where people can have difficult conversations? And not only about race, just in general, right? I think you have to have safety in general, because I mean, I don't think there's anything more sensitive than talking about issues of race in the workplace, you know? So that's my take.
So you've talked a bit about when you started in Garcia and you were working on building this panel and you were, you know, it was a very entry-level job, you were surrounded by just a more inclusive environment. And then, as you mentioned, when you started to rise in rank and meet with other senior level executives and become a senior level executive yourself, you started noticing a change that you were the only Latinx person in the room. You started to notice that you were more in the minority. So when you look at the market research industry, and we've touched on this a little bit before, but do you see any differences between whether a person is an individual contributor or a manager, or as they grow into senior level executive leadership? Do you see a difference in either their comfortability or, we all notice the lack of diversity at the top. Like, yeah. what do you think that impact really is to a person in their career as you see these differences in career level?
Yeah. Well, that's a really good question. You know, it's interesting because in my career, I've become more aware of being the only person in the room the longer that I've been in this industry because of my career trajectory, right? I think for many people, it's the opposite. They start out in this industry and it's kind of like, whoa, a shock. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's been the opposite. And I think I think it goes not only for race and ethnicity, but also gender in our mm-hmm. industry, right? Like yeah. this is an industry that, when we look in general at the workforce, that there's more women than men for whatever reason. And yet as you rise the ranks, there's more men than women. And that doesn't make sense. And so I think we're making strides there, or not strides. I think we're making some movement there, but I think the effect is that, like, if you don't see yourself in those positions, you don't even know that it's possible. It's something I have to grapple with on a personal level, right? I think there's like an inferiority complex, because even though a lot of my career has been focused on multicultural marketing, being a thought leader in the Latinx space, I also take pride in, we've made a lot of innovations and think now from a technology perspective. I have a master's in entrepreneurship and innovation. I'm passionate, not only about multicultural marketing, but also technology and innovation in general. And so that's something I grapple with, right? Like, you're kind of pigeonholed, but I'm also, you know, I think about the industry in general holistically, and we've made strides in that area as well. So, you know, I hope that we're making a difference in terms of showing people that it is possible to be a Latinx founder, to, you know, build a company, you know, that's made it to the Inc. 5000. And hopefully that, you know, that inspires people that maybe don't think that it's possible to be able to do something like that. And yeah. I mean, I'm very passionate about entrepreneurship in general as well. as a way for, you know, as a way for people to make it.
Do you think that, just really quick and then we can move on, do you think that people are in minority groups, whether gender or race and ethnicity, do you think that they are leaving the industry, or do you think that they are just staying stagnant at their role at the highest level they think they can achieve because they don't have anyone, you know, like we've heard it so much in the last couple of weeks, if you can't see it, you don't know that you can have it. And yeah. So do you think that folks are leaving the industry because they're frustrated or because they don't think they can climb higher? Do you think they're just staying stagnant?
I think they're staying stagnant, right? I think it's the same thing that we've seen with when it comes to the discrepancy with in gender, right? Like women aren't leaving the industry. I mean, if anything, there's more women now, but they don't see themselves. And I think, you know, what Wire is doing is amazing. I think Wire is really kind of nurturing the next generation with leadership in this industry. And I hope that Insights in Color is going to be doing the same for people of color in the industry.
Yeah.
Agree.
Yeah.
So I know you've already mentioned, you know, you don't think that a lot of this is specific to the market research industry. And I agree with you. I think that this is, these are all issues that face multiple industries. But I also, maybe I'm an optimist, and I don't know if many people would describe me as an optimist. I think when I said Z, probably was like, no, you're not. she's rolling her eyes over there. But I do feel though that as researchers, we're so naturally curious, and we're so like, with at least with our stakeholders, we are these problem solvers, and we like to dig, and we like to do all these things, and we like to continue to peel back all these layers. Do you think that recognizing that this is an issue, do you think that as market research professionals, we actually have a unique, this is a very leading question. Do you think that we have this unique ability to, I mean, I guess it could go either way, to either ignore them and be like, okay, we're doing what we can, but we need to focus on our actual research. Or do you think that we have this unique ability to acknowledge them and solve them if we actually spent the time and the energy to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm in the same boat as you. Like, I don't think people would call me an optimist, but I do think I am an optimist. And yeah, I think we do have a unique ability. I think the only thing standing in the way is, like, again, it's such a sensitive subject. It's difficult for anybody to speak about. And while I think we all acknowledge it, saying it out loud is difficult. That being said, what's happened this year, if anything good comes out of it, I think we can talk about race and the implication that it has in all aspects of our life more openly. And so, you know, I hope that empowers us, because you're right. I think most people in the market research industry that have been in this for a long time are just curious by nature. We're problem solvers. So if anyone can solve it, we can.
Yeah. Mario, we're going to end with this question that I came up with a while ago. It's just a fun one to end on. And I like the idea of ending on a hopeful note. What is your dream for the market research industry?
As fake optimists, you and I.
What is my dream for the market research industry? I hope we can get to a place where everyone feels comfortable taking a survey. I know that's a super nerdy answer, but I read this article coming out of, you know, the election and polling about how people that take surveys are weird, and essentially is what it said, right? And I've always said that. I'm sorry, respondents, I love you, but you know, it's a very particular person who takes surveys. Yeah. So, and I think fundamentally that's the biggest issue we have in the industry. And it envelops everything that we're talking about here, right? The lack of representativeness. Yeah. And so I hope that we can innovate and make surveys make surveys fun again. Oh man.
Can we have a t-shirt? Oh, merch. Oh, merch. Yes. Make surveys fun again.
I hope we could get to a place where taking surveys isn't like this weird subset of people that do it. Like, yeah. I hope that it could become, you know, more mobile friendly, more inclusive, more just part of our everyday. Because I think, you know, the more we can get into people's mind, the better world that we could create, you know? And so I think that's my hope for the industry. I hope that we can innovate and solve for that so that, it's not so difficult to get respondents of different backgrounds, you know, gender, race, ability. And that, yeah, the market research we do is just more reflective of everyone.
I love that. That's so great. Mario, you've just been really just fantastic to hear from and to listen to. You have such a unique perspective in both just your own professional background as well as just what you have seen and what you've lived. And just thank you so much for having this conversation with us and providing your insights and your voice to our listeners. I just really appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having this platform and having me on. That was a really fun conversation.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for listening to today's episode of MR Explorer. You can find us online at MRXPLORER, that's MRExplorer.com, or you can find us on Twitter and LinkedIn. Links will be in the show notes. Please like, subscribe, and we look forward to exploring more topics about market research with you soon.